Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Today I talked to Charlene Downey and Matt Saunders, two candidates that ran in last month's municipal election. Of course, if you followed the results, you know that they are not presently on city council, but that doesn't mean they don't have lessons to offer from the campaign trail. In fact, it's safe to say that we are sometimes so focused on the horse race that we forget that it's not really a game. So before we start a new council with new issues and old issues, let's take a minute to remember the election. Stories from the Stump is the topic of this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. Now, looking back on the 2018 election, the two most interesting races might have been in Wards 1 and 4. Both those races had the most number of candidates, with 8 each, and both races had well-established incumbents that were looking good to win re-election, and in the end of the day, they did. On the other hand, running in municipal elections isn't easy. There's no party apparatus, the campaign is longer, and you've got to fit little things like jobs and family around all the additional hours of door knocking, attending events, answering questions from press and constituents, the whole shebang. But then it occurred to me, after the campaign is over, we kind of stop thinking about the people who ran but weren't victorious. Sometimes they try and run again, and sometimes they just go back to their lives, and though they try and stay engaged in various ways, it's unlikely that we in the press try and engage with them. I had the idea that I should approach two people that ran, and get down on tape, so to speak, the thoughts they have and the lessons they learned coming out of the other side of a campaign. How have politics changed them, and are they driven to stay involved? So Matt Saunders and Charlene Downey were the two eager participants for this experiment in post-election coverage. Downey finished in fourth place with 15.67% of the vote in Ward 1, and Saunders came in fifth with 10% in Ward 4. Both emerged from the election with a lot of support, but not a lot of controversy running community-minded campaigns that tried to focus more on the issues and less on the politics. And given the tenor of the campaign at the times, that wasn't easy. So on this edition of the Guelph Politicast, I talked to Charlene Downey and Matt Saunders about their campaigning experiences. We cover the hard work, the homework, the long hours, the long list of demands for time, and how they balanced it all. We also talk about what they wish there had been more of during the campaign, like a more substantive debate about policy and issues, and how media might do better while covering the election beyond the horse race. And we also talk about election night and what happens next so far as their political careers are concerned. So I caught up with Matt Saunders and Charlene Downey last week in studio. Okay, so Matt Saunders and Charlene Downey, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting us.
I wanted to start with election night. What were you guys doing on election night, and how were you following the results, or were you following the results, or was there too many nerves, or...
We had a party next door on Alice Street. There's a little clubhouse there that's owned by some friends of mine, and I actually spent more money on beer for that night than I did on some of my advertising.
Is it a campaign expense?
Absolutely. I kept the receipt. Royal City Brewery, support local. We had lots of friends come over, people dropping in for support, and we should have been watching Rogers, and we weren't, but I was reading your live tweets.
Oh, okay.
So that was pretty fun.
Oh, good. That's a great group activity.
It is.
Reading live tweets all on your own phones separately, staring down at your lap.
Well, we were watching a screen as well. We had a big, huge screen with the results coming up.
Oh, okay.
For me, I was downtown. I was at a couple of the different parties that were going on. It took a while for the results to get in, so I was a complete ball of nerves. but after the results started coming in, some people were celebrating, some people obviously didn't win, but it was a good time. Would definitely recommend.
You recommend losing or recommend...
recommend running, recommend experience, and recommend going to the after party, of course.
I was too nervous to go to anybody else's after party but my own.
Fair enough.
That was it.
I always like to sort of compare how reality shapes up to expectation. So where you started in terms of, you know, when you filed your papers, what you thought you were going to run on and what you thought you were going to be the important issues, how did that change over the course of the election? And where did you end up, you know, whether that's in terms of your attitude about local politics or in terms of what you think about the issues, you know, where did, how did you end up versus how you began?
So I think that I started off thinking that the election would be a lot about how development was working in the city and what people were building and what neighborhoods we were planning. But that didn't really seem to get discussed or talked about at all. The election, a lot of discussion about crime, a lot of discussion about the overdose prevention center downtown. Online voting was a huge one that, I mean, I have a lot I can say about that if you want to get into it.
we have 25 minutes, so we can get into it.
But a lot of the things that I thought really mattered and really still do matter, that I still want to keep fighting towards, weren't really discussed at this election. It was difficult to get people to engage with those issues.
I would agree. I ran basically on a social justice platform, and that was my hope, and I think I stayed true to that throughout the campaign. I didn't really engage with the conversations regarding online voting or other than the opioid, the safe injection site downtown, right, and things like that. But yes, I would agree. I felt like some of those conversations, like online voting, the hospital, they kind of took away from what I had hoped to bring to the table of talking about entry-level housing, social housing, and just leveling the playing field.
I wonder what, whose fault is that? In so much as it's not really anybody's fault, but, you know, I think back to when I talked to Craig Norris about the election, and he inevitably asked about the Mercury. This was the first municipal election without the Mercury in press, and admittedly, as someone who runs their own media site, I get a bit bored talking about the Mercury, but I can't deny that there was a presence missing, and I was going to ask you guys about how you felt the press did, and maybe that falls into it, like, maybe without like something like the Mercury helping to create a common narrative, helping to create focus, we get lost in what we're frankly, and we were talking about this before the show, the online voting thing, which became something that was very partisan. It wasn't so much about what are the dangers, what are the advantages. It was about I want online voting and you don't.
It was about us versus them.
Right.
A lot of the conversation became us versus them, a lot of finger pointing. And I've always been much more concerned with people who have their hands up, stepping up, as opposed to blaming each other for something. You have to have the conversation and keep the door open. So when we look at the fault, I don't know. Like, I don't really have an answer. I mean, I know, and I can't speak for Matt, but I know I was getting hit with questionnaires from lobby groups left, right, and center. I mean, I had somebody send me some very in-depth questions the night before the election.
I'm sorry, Charlene.
No, it wasn't you this time, honey. Actually, you were incredibly respectful. You sent out your questionnaire way before anything else happened, and it was my own fault that I was a little bit late getting it back to you.
I wasn't fishing for that, but...
Yes, you were.
Yeah. Regarding the local media, it was... A lot of things were happening that just didn't get covered.
Yeah.
That was my biggest frustration, of course. And as Charlene said, there were a lot of interest groups that were communicating to their own members and their own interested parties which candidates supported which issues.
Right.
But if you're not tapped into that local activist group, you're not going to get any of that information.
Right.
You'll get all your voting information based on the one article in the Trib.
Right.
Or the one candidate speech in Guelph Today, or the one questionnaire at Guelph Politico.
Or the one person who knocks on your door.
Or the one person who knocks on your door.
If you were lucky enough to get that.
How many like sort of interest group questionnaires do you think you guys got?
Oh, my mercy.
At like least 10.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Plus me, plus Today, plus Tribune, plus Rogers, and you know, so it's a bit overwhelming.
It was very overwhelming, especially when, you know, you had some points that you wanted to bring across,
right,
that you wanted to put on the table, and you were not always given that opportunity to present those ideas, as Matt said. Like there was, I think both Matt and I were very concerned about development and some of the issues that once you start digging, you know, you really spend time digging.
Right.
At least I did. I believe as an educator, that's my background, that I believe in doing your homework. And so I did. And that information was very rarely asked for.
Yeah.
Right. Or even given the opportunity to present it.
You mean in terms of like follow up? It was about like, what do you think of A? And then you get your 600 words or whatever.
Exactly.
I apologize. But no, it's you know, it just makes me think that a lot of the, when I would see the posts of like who responded to what questionnaire, it would be like, so-and-so checked all our boxes.
Yeah.
And I mean, everyone has, you know, if you're an interest group, you have a right to talk about the issues and talk about the candidates as you see fit. But I think there was a phrasing that maybe if you didn't respond to, let's say, the Wellington Water Watchers questionnaire, you weren't someone who was in favor of protecting
water. Oh, you
were
evil incarnate.
Okay. So there's a spectrum.
And hated water.
But, you know, it's also speaks to the fact that that you know, there aren't enough hours in the day, and that these, a lot of you guys running for office are not necessarily in a position where you can take time off from the day job in order to focus on campaigning. And you know, is there a conflict there that, you know, or how did you handle that conflict, rather, that, you know, there was never enough hours in the day to be able to do everything you needed to do?
Sleep debt.
Yeah. And then I think for myself, it was just really looking at the questions and what could I answer. Unfortunately, I don't necessarily believe that things are very black and white. There's a lot of gray area in the middle. And a lot of the questionnaires were asking you to be a yes or no answer without really a really good opportunity to present, to dig a little deeper and go, okay, well, here's the why.
Right.
And I mean, and I did appreciate your questionnaire because it did really ask for the why. But once you got into the campaign, like, you know, once September hit, those questions that were asking for the why, they took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And you're already putting in, you know, I don't know how many hours, 10 hours sometimes, focusing on other things. And then to come home, you haven't seen your kids all day. And it's like, okay, now I got to think about that. All right, I can do this. And then sometimes you just go, no, not going to do it.
Yeah.
And then you get whatever, you know, whatever. Right. It's, yeah, it's what it is.
Yeah. It you know, and maybe you can speak to this too, Matt. You actually tried to make a point about an issue. You wrote up a fairly detailed piece about the issues with parkland.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it actually got a response, an official response from the city. You know, so you took that extra initiative, not to say that Charlene didn't, but just to say that, you know, you said, like, I'm going to plant a flag here. We need to talk about this. And you sold the point to the point that you actually got an official response. Did that work out the way you hoped?
I had hoped that there would be more engagement on the issue.
Right.
The report was made. The city did respond. There was some media coverage around that on one of the local news sources. But the issue with the parkland, there's a parallel here with the issue with Urbicon last election.
Right.
If you combine the fact that we're missing parkland with the recent parkland dedication bylaw decision, which delayed that, one of the numbers that was calculated for how much money was lost by that decision is in the $8 million range. So we have a very similar parallel in the amount of money that essentially sank our mayoral race last election, but was not even talked about this election. And I felt that was a very strange dichotomy.
Right. Could it be phrased, though, that we're not going to miss $8 million we don't have?
Well, it's that, whether or not you paid $8 million or you failed to collect $8 million of revenue. On the balance sheet, it has the same effect.
Yeah, right. But it's, you know, I think that just looking at it from the horse race perspective, it's kind of easier to blame someone for losing the $8 million than for not collecting the $8 million that might have been out there.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And to talk about the story of not collecting versus losing, it really does take a little bit of nuance to explain what happened with that $8 million as well, and why it was a loss, and where it went, and who it went to. And that sort of nuance, I think, was difficult to express in the very yes-no question answer kind of discourse we were having this election.
Right.
And I would add to that is, you know, when you're going door to door, most of the people you're talking to are upset about development. They're upset about the rapid expansion that Guelph is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when you try to explain the parkland dedication bylaw or the fact that we as taxpayers subsidize development by 20 to 35%, they go, oh my goodness. And then it just goes away. They go, oh, but we really like blah or
right.
Those signs are cute.
But I hope no one's making up their decision on whose signs are cute. But
yes, they are. Unbelievably, yes, they were.
You will note the one guy who had his dog on his sign did win the election.
You know what? You're making a point. he did win.
One of the few candidates this election to unseat an incumbent at that. So you know, next election, my signs will have a dog on them.
I will point out that Mike fully admits that the dog won the election for him.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
But Mike is also a very competent person.
He's an honest broker, at least.
He is.
I wanted to follow up with what you were saying about the nuance and about the, you know, people are concerned about development. But once you start getting into the nitty-gritty of these are the numbers, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, we have to grow, there's NIMBYism at play.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really, even in, you know, talking to someone for 20 minutes on their stoop, it's not enough time to sort of really, I guess, break someone into sort of coming around, like, this is a priority for me, this is a priority for you, and this is how, these are the blocks that we have to get over. And, you know, maybe at the end of the day, it's just going to come down to who has the cuter sign. I mean, because just because the nuance is so hard to wrap their head around.
It is. And, you know, it's funny that Bill released an article today talking about the development and the two sides in Guelph, you know, totally anti-development, but then the people who want Guelph to stay as a little town. So we need to develop. We know we need to develop. But once somebody has decided that they hate development, there's no conversation there anymore. I mean, we need to bring in, you know, some of those higher rises, but we want them to look nice. I mean, really, we have to be tired of, are we all not just tired of filing cabinets? You know, we can do smart growth. We can do something that is sustainable, that, you know, we have some social housing aspects to it. I mean, inclusionary zoning has been brought in the last year or so, and it's something that we should be thinking about. So development doesn't have to be evil.
Right.
But to explain the numbers, I mean, honestly, you'd have to have, well, put a lot more time than the 20 minutes on the stoop for sure.
Right. But I remember in Ward 6 race a couple of elections ago, Todd Dennis basically won because he, maybe not basically, but he did make a point of saying, you know, people are a little sick of hearing cooking. Oh, Lord, where's my perspicacity? I was able to spit that word out. The cookie cutter the cookie cutter houses. People hated hearing like they live in a cookie cutter house. So even there's like even both sidesism to that. You say filing cabinet. People say, here's my lovely modern condo in downtown Guelph. It's
the very modern condos. They're not so much filing cabinets. They're the older ones. We've developed a lot of we've created a lot of better development practices in the past 15 years, green roofs, terraces, setbacks that make for much more beautiful buildings, much more livable buildings as well. And I'd like to see more of that in Guelph, of course.
I'm just saying beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But,
it certainly is.
I wanted to talk about, you were talking about doing your homework. Is there more homework than you anticipated? Like, in terms of getting, I mean, I know for me, the process of going to every council meeting now, like, when I started that out, I didn't appreciate, like, reading a agenda for hours, because it's 400 pages long, and trying to parse that down into, like, a paragraph that I can then explain to people that, you know, that, and this plays into getting back to the engagement factor. One of the things I've been wondering about is, do we need to work, in order to increase voter or decrease voter apathy, increase voter turnout, engagement is something we should be working on every day for 4 years versus 2 months every 4 years. And I imagine the learning, the research and the homework you did was kind of a crash course and sort of gives you an insight in just like sort of how difficult it is to wrap your head around some of these municipal issues.
It really is learning a complete language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is the governmentese, legalese. It's, I mean, I have an English degree and an educational degree. And you're like, what is this? Like, what are they trying to say? I remember going to a session on DC, and honestly, I was like, I'm pretty sure we're not talking about comics.
No, it's
just a lot of acronyms.
Capital of the United States.
Yes, exactly. So, and I think that is a problem. Absolutely. How can we possibly expect people to engage in municipal government if they can't understand what's going on?
Right.
If the learning curve is so steep, because we throw around these acronyms like we expect everybody to understand what they are. You know, we talked about P2s, art, whatever. There's so much to read.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking, you know, one of the first things I bought once I declared was the Municipal Act.
Mm-hmm.
And like, my word, it's just an incredible document. And I think we are failing. We're failing in getting the information out there. It's part of our mandate to engage with Guelph, engage with the residents. And people, we can't.
Right.
Because the language is just not there. Like, there's a bridge that has not been crossed.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we need to work on. And I think, you know, people like yourself certainly are helping.
Yeah.
And there are many times in your podcast that you talk about an issue before the actual, before it actually comes up on council.
Right.
But we need to really break down the agenda before a meeting so that people have opportunity to engage.
Right, and I mean, part of that too is, you know, you see the development signs, you know, some people get that notice, some people don't get that notice till the night before that, you know, hey, did you hear? And I don't know what the solution is to any of this, because I think these are ongoing issues that aren't necessarily talked about on a daily. How do you feel? You talk.
Well, you make a good point about the engagement, because even when we do attempt to bring people in for the engagement, it's really hard to reach and engage with them effectively. Also, I found when I was over on Whitelaw Road in particular, there's a brand new development that's the request came in, the proposal came in for it about a week before the election.
Yeah.
And I happened to be canvassing on the street, on that street, about a week before the election. And it was really interesting seeing at just what point the people who knew about the development and had received the notice from the city and when their neighbors hadn't. And I assume it's based on as the crows flies distance to the development, but these are people who are going to be seriously affected by virtue of living on a road that's going to seriously increase in the amount of traffic it sees, which don't receive any notice, which didn't get to hear. They were learning about the development from me as I went to their door, which is, I suppose, if city councilors want to keep canvassing throughout the 4 years of their term, would be a great way to get the word out, but it is a lot of work.
Well, it's a lot of work on top of their part-time job that's really a full-time on top of their full-time job. If, you know, they,
God forbid they have kids.
And for young families too, and there are counselors who do have young families. Although, you know, you guys may feel this too, that, you know, you and I think we are all on social media here and we're active on social media. We have this feeling that we post something there, we can reach everyone. But the reality is you still have to go out there and door knock, and you have to talk to people face to face, because there is still that barrier, whether that's just a technological one or a societal one or you know, an age one where people have come of age with social
media. We have an incredible resource in Guelph in our neighborhood groups.
Yeah.
And every single ward in Guelph has at least one. And I do believe there's an opportunity there to utilize the neighborhood groups as kind of a catchment for that information. And I would like, that was something I was hoping to bring forward, but we'll see. I'm still quite happy with my neighborhood groups, and I'll continue connecting with them as much as I can. Because they're the ground level.
Right.
There's that first step. I mean, I don't even know how many people I talked to that didn't even know what municipal government did. Like, had no clue. And really, municipal government, you don't know what it does until you've had that opportunity or you've been negatively impacted by them.
Right.
Or by it.
Right. And that's sort of what drives people to council, is like this high rise that's going up next block over. I'm, you know, mad about online voting, or I'm mad about Parkland not making that money. It's like the anger drives us to council rather than trying to start with like meaningful engagement and maybe trying to get out in front of an issue. Yeah.
We got to start with education.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking about voter apathy, whether we're talking about just being apathetic in general towards city municipal government, it has to start with education. We have to get the information out there because information is power. And if you don't feel like you have any, you don't engage.
So how did your perceptions change from where you started? You know, maybe you, you know, talking about the educating people and, you know, was there more time door knocking, you know, just like trying to educate people? You know, that it's, you thought there was, it sounded like from talking to the two of you, there was going to be this big grand issues based debate. But, you know, from the sounds of it, it starts with just trying to get people aware of municipal politics. And, you know, how do we eventually cross that Rubicon to having that grand debate when we have to start with the basics? You know, you can't do algebra until you learn how to add one and one together.
And I think that's what we do have to start with is the basics.
Yeah.
We really do. And whether it's, I don't know, somebody steps up, you know, a podcast that happens that starts talking about what are the basics of the municipal government process in Guelph. And then you dig apart or dig into those agendas before the meetings and give opportunity and start that process.
Right.
And I think that there is an opportunity there for that to happen.
It's tougher, I feel, because Matt, you and I are West Enders, and I don't know how maybe you feel, but you know, it's sometimes easy to feel sort of divorced from the rest of the city.
Yeah, the Hanlon is a very wide gap that separates the west of Guelph from the rest of Guelph.
Yeah,
and lots of different ways I think we could try to bring the two halves together, but it's very difficult. A lot of people who live in our end of town commute to Kitchener-Waterloo to work or Cambridge, they really don't feel a strong connection to the city where they only spend a few hours to sleep.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that'd be the same in the East End as well.
That's fair to say, I think. And so as a result, even if the people are aware that there are issues at the municipal level, they do know what the government does in theory, they just don't care.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Downer.
So how do you? No, well, I don't think so. I don't think it has to be a downer. I think we should look at it as an opportunity. So how do you change the dialogue?
Right.
You know, there's a narrative there that we want to get better. Like we want people to engage. We want people to be informed. We want them to feel like they are part of the process. So you got to look for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's something I struggle with. Doing what I do, which is what I hear when people talk about what they want out of a media source. They want, you know, they want facts, they want local focus, they want somebody sitting at city council. It's like, well, that's what I do, but it seems like people want the shouting matches and they want the partisan politics. And I mean, I don't expect us to sit here and resolve it all, but I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how to take that first step. And you guys took that first step because you saw issues in your community and you said, I'm going to step up and take part and get active and learn the lingo, learn the background, do the research, do the homework, come up with my own suggestions, engage with others, listen to others, refine ideas, and hopefully take that to the body of city council to enact ideas. And I'm wondering, again, not expecting a clear answer, but, you know, how do we encourage more people to take that step? Even if they don't want to run for city council, just how do they get to a point where they don't say, I don't vote? And I saw this on Facebook in a couple of different places, people saying, well, my friend said they don't vote in the municipal election because stuff doesn't matter at the municipal level versus provincial or federal, where you actually have very little to do because party politics, because it's Ottawa and Toronto, because bigger populations. It's backwards the way we think about it.
It really is, because municipal government is the only level of government that is truly accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. and yet we don't take advantage of it. Anybody can approach the horseshoe and talk and, and engage, but there's a lot of fear attached to it. A lot of fear, and I think fear is what holds us back. You know, fear of not being ignorant,
right?
Of not knowing the issues, of not knowing the language. And again, I really do believe it comes back to the education.
Right.
There has to be. We have to look at the next steps. We want to increase voter turnout. We're going to have to take some steps.
Matt, you're letting Charlene down.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
We all know how much Charlene loves to talk, so I was willing to just let it go.
I'm blaming my Irish heritage.
Well, let me ask you guys, maybe to wrap up, you know, how do you intend to stay involved, or do you intend to stay involved, or, you know, you both accepted the invitation to come here, and others did not, I will say that. But.
We weren't, oh, Adam.
I'm just saying that, you know, there's some people who are, like, taking some time to think about, you know, maybe what their next steps are. And, you know, they want to let the election sit for a while. But, I mean, you guys were keyed up enough to want to come in and rehash it all here. So I'm wondering, are you looking to stay involved? Are you, how are you looking to stay involved? And, you know, are you even thinking about trying this all over again in 4 years?
Well, one of my best friends said to me at election night as we were watching the results come in, election 22 campaign starts today. So
one of my friends said that too.
No, it's running through it the first time. I'm a numbers guy. I ran the numbers. 14% of candidates win on their first try. Jumps up to 33% on the second try. Think about that.
I'm going to use my dog next time.
Yeah. Also put your dog on your signs.
Yes. Yes. I think there are steps that I'm going to be looking at. I want to continue the process. I kind of got used to going to city council. I enjoyed it. But yeah, I feel an obligation to continue. And not that that's put upon anybody, but I've put it upon myself.
Right.
As I mentioned to, you know, some friend, it was like I've put my feet into the pool and I'm not entirely sure I want to take them out again right now. So what those steps are, I mean, maybe I'll step forward and start digging a little bit deeper into the agendas. Who knows? Who knows? Right now, I got to get through hat season. I make hats. I got to do that right now. January, let's see what happens.
All right. After hat season.
After hats. All about the hats right now.
Well, the issues aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
They are still the same issues. Whether or not I'm working to make some change inside or outside the horseshoe, the change still does need to happen.
It does.
Right. And people do need to push that forward.
Looking back where you started, bringing it full circle, so to speak, if you could give one piece of advice to yourself, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, knowing what you know now, what would that be?
Don't start 3 or 4 months ago.
Start sooner.
Yeah. No, it's a long-term effort. It's a long-term proposition to run for city council. It's not something you can do and win as an unknown person, as a stranger. Everybody I know, my network, my friends, my people are all around the university area, but I ran in Ward 4, which is not very close to here at all.
Right.
So trying to build a new connection with a new neighborhood that I'm not as well known in was a big struggle.
Right.
So that's something that takes more than just a few months at the start of an election campaign.
It's a marathon, not a race.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whew. What would I do? I think I would tell myself to have more confidence. As a woman entering politics, I was told a lot, be careful, there's going to be threats, you know, there's going to be, people are going to attack you. So I mean, I was really spoiling for a fight. I was waiting for it. I was like, yes. But I still didn't have that confidence, you know, that when some people were being threatening or trying to change the conversation into a way I didn't want to go, or lobby groups that I maybe didn't necessarily agree with, didn't having the confidence to say, nope, I'm sorry, I can't do that because of this, or I don't agree with you because of this.
Good advice. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking part, and I hope you guys do stay involved. I think we need more people like you in the civic discourse. So thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam. Thanks for having us today.
Loads of fun.
And once again, that was Charlene Downey and Matt Saunders. They were not elected to City Council last month, but the ones who were will be sworn in on December 3rd in the council chambers of City Hall. Guelph Politico will obviously be there with full coverage. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph by considering a donation to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. We would greatly appreciate any and all donations that you can offer. And thanks to everyone who has donated and is continuing to donate. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.